Hi, and welcome to Straight Shot Radio. My name is Johnny Slick, and I'm the owner and head coach at Straight Shot Training. This is part two in our three-part series on the three main macronutrients: protein, fat, and carbohydrates. Fat seems to ride this roller coaster of heroism and villainy every other decade. Sometimes it's the worst thing you can put into your body, and it's guaranteed to clog your arteries, and the next thing you know it, dietary fat is our best friend and people can't get enough of it. In this episode, we give you the rundown of exactly what fat is, what it does, where it fits into your diet, why different people need different amounts, and how to figure out how much fat is right for you. Plus, plenty of fat myth-busting along the way and a whole lot of science from Coach Rebecca. Hey everybody, we're back with Rebecca Reifsnyder. Last time we were with her was last episode where we talked about protein. Today we're talking about fat or lipids. I prefer to use lipids because when you say fat, people think it makes them fat, and we're going to get into why that's not true, or why sometimes it is true. We're going to talk about what fat is, what are the requirements of it, what our recommendations or registered dietitians' recommendations are for fat intake, and then talk about some misconceptions about fat along the way. The same breakdown that we did with protein, but with lipids this time. So, welcome, Rebecca.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
I forgot to thank you last episode. You ran out to do your session.
Oh.
So I had to thank you in my wrap-up of the show. So I'll thank you now in case you need to run out for joining us. So why don't you tell us about the structure of fat? And we mentioned this last episode. Rebecca does have a degree in nutrition, so she'll give us the nerdy version of what fat is. So why don't you break down what fat is from this chemistry standpoint?
Okay, so fat is, you have a glycerol molecule, which is kind of like the glue that holds everything together. So you have that at one end, and then off of that you have three tails of fatty acids that come off of that. And those fatty acids are basically a string of carbon molecules that are held together with bonds. So that's
what fat is.
That's what fat is.
Yeah. Everyone was really dying to hear what that was. So that's the structure of it. Let's talk about digestion. How your body first just breaks down. We'll talk about how it uses those fatty acids, but just from a breakdown standpoint, we said before with protein that starts in the mouth,
right?
Obviously with mechanical breakdown of the food. Is there any enzyme in your mouth that breaks down any fat?
No.
So where's the first enzyme that actually starts breaking down fat?
It doesn't actually get until the small intestine. So you have your bile and your gallbladder that will be released into the small intestine that helps kind of emulsify the fats, kind of open them up a little bit, and then your pancreas will secrete an enzyme called lipase, which will then actually start to break down the fat.
Okay. And this process takes considerably longer than other macronutrients.
So, right.
I mean, I know different fats have different breakdowns, but it's definitely longer than carbs, but longer than protein. So what hours-wise, breaking down a high-fat meal?
Oh, I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of hours.
Yeah, and does it slow down gastric emptying? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what slowing down gastric emptying is? That's kind of a leading question.
So fat is, it helps you stay fuller longer. Part of that is because it doesn't mix well with water, so in your stomach it tends to kind of float to the top, so it gives you that feeling of fullness longer because it stays towards the top of your stomach. And then because the fat is so kind of greasy and oily, it slows up the absorption process of anything in your stomach and in your intestines, so it just makes the flowing process through your intestines a lot slower because your body's trying to glean everything out of the food that you're eating as it can.
But also, so some of it is not being absorbed throughout the intestine and is actually important in passing through, eliminating food correctly, which is why people who are on low-fat diets might have issues with using the bathroom because your fat is so important in peristalsis, moving food through your system. So I think it's another thing along with it is that some of it isn't absorbed.
Right, exactly.
But it serves a different purpose by not being absorbed. So how does your body use the fat, though, that is being absorbed in the small intestine and going down from there?
So it'll break it down for energy. That's probably the main thing that it's used for. So your body wants to burn carbs first, kind of like we talked about last time with the protein. But then it will, especially when your body's at rest or your heart rate's at a lower level, it'll then switch from burning carbs to burning fat. So you'll break up those fatty acid chains, and then that breakup will then be used. That process enters into what's called the electron transport chain, and then you'll glean ATP out of that.
Out of that, the old ETC.
Yes.
We abbreviate everything to make it shorter in the math class. Yes, so fat is fuel. You and I are running primarily on fat right now.
Right.
And the way that we measure this is something called the respiratory quotient. Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever do much with that in your...
We didn't have the equipment necessary to do a whole lot in college.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Yeah, I mean, we had the scale. Right. I mean, just we knew where things typically fell on the RQ, but we didn't have any way of measuring it. Right. But I'm not sure if you did.
No.
For the respiratory quotient is the way that we can collect the carbon dioxide being exhaled out mm-hmm. of you and the oxygen going in, and we can tell whether you're burning fat or carbohydrates as a fuel source, because when you burn fat as a fuel source, there has to be oxygen present to burn fat as a fuel source, because the ETC, the electron transport chain, is part of the aerobic cycle of turning macronutrients into usable energy, or ATP.
Right.
You can do it without oxygen with carbohydrates mm-hmm. in the ATP-PC system, or using anaerobic glycolysis, but we're probably getting way too nerdy. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that when you are at rest, your respiratory quotient will show that you're burning almost all fats as a fuel source. Whereas when you get to the opposite end of the spectrum, an all-out sprint, your RQ will show that you're burning like 100% carbohydrates for that.
Mm-hmm.
Most activities are going to fall somewhere in between there, right?
Right.
So why don't you give us, like, what would be an example of something like middle to high range on an RQ scale?
Well, the highest range would be sitting down, sleeping, all of those kinds of things. Then as your heart rate starts to elevate a little bit, like walking or stretching or something like that, you would still be more in that fat burning range. And then as you start to be breathing heavier, then you kind of switch over and it's more of the carb burning cycle.
Yeah, so there are, so in between, because what is it goes from 0.7 to 1?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So one will be all fat, 0.7 is all carbs. So yeah, so in between there, like 0.85, this would be whenever your heart rate's slightly elevated, you might be doing an elliptical at a faster pace, or a jog or something. Your body's burning a mixture of carbs and fat.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why I bring this up is there's this misconception of the fat burning zone that I wanted to get out of the way, because it's a thing that's been around for a long time and people are still confused about it.
Right.
The fat burning zone of like 60 to 70% of your heart rate max on the elliptical is a higher on the respiratory quotient scale. So we can say, well, if your heart rate's lower on this scale, you're going to be burning more fat. So this is the fat burning zone. And if you go higher than this, you're not going to be burning body fat. You're just going to be burning carbs, and you're not going to be losing any weight doing this. So how can you educate me, Rebecca, to why this is not correct?
Again, when you're thinking about weight on your body, so the adipose tissue, it comes down to calories in and calories out. It doesn't matter where those calories come from, whether it's from carbs or whether it's from fat. So if your body is burning carbohydrates at that point of your exercise, as long as at the end of the day everything's going to even itself out. So if you burn a lot of carbs, then your body's going to absorb carbohydrates in order to replenish your stores, or it can take fat from your body and chemically alter it to make it into glucose.
Yeah.
So your body can then store it as
glycogen. Yeah.
So then you're taking your fat that was stored and turning it into carbohydrate to replenish your stores, as opposed to just directly burning fat.
Yes.
So you don't have to burn fat directly in order to lose weight. Your body's going to even everything out, whether you're burning carbohydrates or burning protein or burning fat, because you're always going to be burning a little bit
of
everything.
Something. Yeah. The way I always like to explain to my clients is, if you're going to get an elliptical and you had 20 minutes on it, and in 20 minutes you stayed at the low heart rate that was the fat burning zone, and even though you burned 80% of your calories came from fat, you still only burned 200 calories in 20 minutes. Whereas you did 20 minutes of a minute really fast, minute slow, where your heart rate would get up into like the 85% range on the sprints. And in those intervals, you end up burning 600 calories instead of 200. Well, now you've created a 400 calorie deficit higher with the interval method,
right,
even though you weren't anywhere near the fat burning zone.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, you either end up with 200 calories that you burned or 600 calories that you burned. At the end of the week, you're going to end up losing more weight if you're burning more calories.
Right, exactly.
So that's why the whole fat burning zone on these treadmills, we should just tear that sticker off all of them.
Yes.
Because it's really confusing. And it is, I mean, there's a lot of science behind it. That's why it's confusing. That's why hopefully you all have been paying attention for the past 5 minutes when talking about this, because it is confusing, but it's something that definitely is a myth.
Yeah.
You mentioned fat being stored and then turned back into usable energy. So let's talk about storage as fat for a second.
Yeah.
People think that because they eat fat, I say people think, I'm just saying a lot of misconceptions.
Right.
A lot of people think that when you eat fat, that you store fat.
Right.
Okay, so it's obviously easier for your body to store fat quicker because with carbohydrates, it does have to do some conversion to convert it to adipose tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it not true that if you eat fat, you store it?
Because if your body needs energy to burn, you're going to burn fat. So when you're at rest, your body wants to burn fat because it's one of the easiest methods for it to do that. So when, you know, most of our day we're either sitting or walking or standing or doing something slow, so our body wants to have fat readily available in order to burn. So that's what you're going to do with it first, is you're going to burn it. And then if you have extra, then yes, it will store it, but that stored fat also has very important responsibilities in your body.
Yeah.
It helps you stay warm. It helps protect your organs from injury. It, you know, provides a storage site for other things like vitamins and minerals and things that your body needs. So even though you are storing some of the fat, that's not necessarily a bad thing as long as it's not out of control.
Yeah, so people who have too low of body fat tend to have issues with vitamin A, D, E, and K, which are fat-soluble vitamins, meaning they kind of live in fat. They're not like water-soluble vitamins like vitamin C and all the B vitamins. So that's why we have these, on these body fat scales, we'll say men have essential body fat of somewhere between like 4 and 6,
mm-hmm.
and women's essential, what is it? Is it 8 to 10 or 9 to, is that high?
And I think athletes like down 12 and 14.
So we have essential, and then we have athlete, and then we have
health
range, and then we have overweight, and then mm-hmm. there's obese. So you can still be very healthy. Like a woman with body fat percentage of 23-24% is still very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And a quarter of me is fat. Well, yes, it's adipose tissue, but you're not fat.
Yes.
Same thing with guys. The guys should be somewhere between 10 and 20, unless you're an athlete, you could be lower. So a guy with 18% body fat, you know, is still decently healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is just people have certain goals, appearance goals, things like that. But understand that you do need body fat. It's important that your body stores it, and it's actually used for long-term energy in starvation situations.
Right.
We haven't always had access to food whenever we want it.
Yes.
And a lot of people live in areas where they don't have quick access to food, and which is why our bodies store fat so well, so they can use them whenever we run out of fuel, we run out of snacks.
Yes.
All right, so I've talked about storage, talked about utilization. Let's get into the fats that your body needs. So we talked about the essential amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
There are also essential fatty acids.
Yes.
So the ones that people are familiar with are the omega-3, omega-6, and omega-9. Some people, I mean, they're so concerned about O3 and O6, but there's also omega-9 fatty acids.
Yes.
So where do those terms come from?
Terms?
Yeah. What is an omega-3 fatty acid?
Yes, so it's basically, it comes from where the double bond occurs in your carbon. So the omega-3 and the omega-6 are both polyunsaturated fatty acids, which basically means that there's not as many hydrogens attached to all the carbons, so there are some carbons that have what are called double bonds, which then make the tail, instead of straight, it's a little bit more crooked.
Yeah. By the way, your hand gestures are super helpful right now.
Gonna have to start having a TV show so I can use my hands.
Yeah.
But so with the omega-6 and the omega-3, that's telling you where the double bond is located.
Yeah. That's a really, you know, super big way of breaking them down. Most people know omega-6s as pro-inflammation and omega-3s as anti-inflammation.
Right.
You have to have that give and take.
If
you don't have enough inflammation in your body can't clot properly. I used to be on so much fish oil when I didn't know much about this that I could cut myself and bleed for hours. I stopped taking fish oil. And omega-3 is an anti-inflammatory, so whereas you have the 6 that helps with clotting and healing and stuff like that, you have omega-3, which helps keep you from getting too inflamed. There's a lot of issues that come from inflammation, including a lot of cardiologists are now saying that that inflammation is the leading issue behind heart disease from like a very, very, very beginning standpoint of it. Like obviously plaque plays an issue in your arteries and cholesterol and heart and blood pressure, but all of those things can be caused by too much inflammation in the body.
Right.
So this is why it's important, and as we get down into where to get your fat from, to get a variety of different fats.
Yes.
So we said omega-3 and omega-6 are polyunsaturated fatty acids. There's also monounsaturated fatty acids, and there's saturated fatty acids, mm-hmm. and there's trans fatty acids, which we'll get into. So let's quickly just get through a couple of sources. What would be a good source? Let's start with mono.
Olive oil is a good...
Monounsaturated.
Monounsaturated.
Avocado.
Avocado, right.
A lot of plant oils...
Have some
in it, right. Yeah, but most of those are going to be polyunsaturated.
Yes.
So then polyunsaturated, I know nuts.
Yeah, nuts.
A lot of polyunsaturated fatty acids in it.
Safflower oil, canola oil, most of the oils that you can get are polyunsaturated.
Fish oil.
Yes.
I know fish oil has a lot of O3 polyunsaturated fatty acids.
Yes.
So unsaturated fatty acids, are those easier for your body to break down?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Easier to use for fuel, easier mm-hmm. to do everything with than saturated. Saturated isn't necessarily bad, and we'll get into that in a second, but what are some examples of saturated fatty acids?
Any fatty meats, lard, Crisco. Yep.
And any fat that's solid at room temperature.
Right.
And that's what you said earlier about these double bonds.
Well, Crisco's trans fat.
Yes, yeah.
Cross that one out.
Yeah. So the... polyunsaturated, monounsaturated, talking about those double bonds. What makes saturated fat different?
It doesn't have any double bonds, so it's saturated with hydrogen.
There's
no room for any double bonds to occur, so all of the tails of your fatty acids are smashed together and that's why it can stay solid at room temperatures because there's not those crooked tails on it.
Yep. For a long time, saturated fat got a bad rep because of its link to heart disease. But people who eat more saturated fat tend to have higher instances of heart disease. There's a lot of other things that go into play with that. And it's definitely, from what we know, and every time I talk about this, I'm like, well, as far as I know right now, this
exactly.
could change tomorrow. As far as I know right now, it's typically better to get more of your fat from unsaturated sources.
Yes.
And saturated sources like... the fat in meat might not be as good as the saturated sources in butter, just because of the fat, even though it's all saturated, is still different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about coconut oil? Is that saturated, unsaturated?
That is saturated.
Yes, because it's solid at room temperature. Mm-hmm. So this is one where doctors who are studying saturated fat and heart disease are having trouble, because in places where they eat tons and tons and tons of coconut products and coconut oil, they don't have heart disease.
Right.
So they started researching coconut oil and found that the lauric acid, the type of saturated fat that's in coconuts, is much easier broken down than any other saturated fat.
Right.
So they're now saying, well, it's good for your it's good for your brain, it's good for your skin, it's a great fuel source. Just one of those things where you can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. You have to look at where these sources are coming from. But just don't do it in excess.
Right.
The same thing, butter's not bad for you. There's actually a lot of omega-3 in butter and in a lot of dairy products, especially in grass-fed, I was going to say beef. You're not getting butter from beef. It's one of those things where I think it's good to get a good fat profile by mixing the things that you're eating. So you don't need to totally avoid things. Like, soybean oil is not one of the greatest ones.
No.
So when you look at the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, ideal would be like a 1 to 3 or 1 to 6, 03 to 06 ratio.
Right.
Which is typically what people used to get back when we ate a mixture of things.
Right.
And now that we eat so many processed things, the American diet is like 1 to 50, 03 to 06. Soybean oil is 1 to 63, 03 to 06. So super air quotations, pro-inflammatory. Right. But as long as it's mixed in, as long as you're not getting a ton of it, if you get a little bit here and there, it's not going to kill you.
Exactly.
What is going to kill you is trans fats, right, Rebecca?
Not necessarily.
Oh, dang, okay. Okay, trans fats. Trans fats were created by adding an extra hydrogen bond to a polyunsaturated?
Yes.
Okay, and then that would basically kind of make it a saturated fat.
Right.
Just it would be solid at room temperature.
Yes. Okay. Yep. So you break the double bond by chemically sticking a hydrogen back in, so then the crook in the carbon chain is no longer there, so then they can slide together again, and then that's why they're solid at room temperature.
Okay. Yeah, shelf life is longer, they don't go rancid. It was made so that we could sell things better without them going bad at grocery stores.
Right.
Not great to eat, though, in high quantities.
Not in high quantities.
Yes, it's not something that your body was originally designed to be taking
it's
in.
It's a chemically man-made fat.
Yeah, and your body can still break it down, but it's really not something that you need to be... There's no recommended intake for trans fat.
Besides, keep it as low as possible.
Keep it as low as possible. But if you get some stuff like, think about donuts... any type of pastry that's pre-made, all of those things are going to have trans fat in it to keep their shelf life long. Just don't eat a ton of them, and you're fine with that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's get into the factors affecting fat requirements.
So a lot of that goes to what your goals are, how much fat you have currently on your body, and then what your goals are as far as weight loss or weight gain and those kinds of things.
And as for athletes, somebody who, we talked about the respiratory quotient earlier, so let's say you are a sprinter versus a competitive speed walker.
Right.
The speed walker is going to need probably a diet that's higher in fat because their heart rate's lower for their sport, as opposed to the sprinter who's going to be eating less fat so that he has room for more carbs in his diet.
Right.
So that would be something that would, depending on what type of exercise you do. So you and I kind of experimented with this last year, where when we did a lot of aerobic work, we were doing your favorite 6 and 7 mile runs.
Oh yes.
Where we had a diet that was higher by percentage in fat, and then we've also done more sprint work as we got into the summer, where we dropped the fat and went up on the carbs.
Right.
Did you feel like that worked? That helped? You just hate running so much.
I hate running so much, it didn't matter. No, I think it definitely did make a difference.
Yeah.
I'd also learn more about how my body functions and different things I need to adjust in my diet.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about diet-wise. So if people are trying to start, the printer's going off in here, we're going to have somebody running and grabbing copies. Fat intake when dieting.
Yes.
So everybody's different. We've talked about how to figure out your macros before. Right. But why is fat still important to have when you're dieting?
Well, you have your fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and K. Those requirements stay the same whether you're dieting or not, so you need to have fat in your body to get those vitamins in and then be able to move those vitamins throughout your body and store them. Satiety is another thing. If you take fat out of your diet, you are going to be hungry all the time.
Yes.
So having that in your diet is going to help you stay full with that. And your body needs it for fuel. So
it's also going to help you stay focused on your diet, because if you're trying to diet and you're trying to take your calories down and you're not eating any fat, you're going to be hungry all the time and end up eating things that you didn't plan on eating.
Right, exactly.
So yeah, it's definitely important when you're dieting for fullness. And then we talked before about digestion and making sure you still use the bathroom while you're dieting. What about bulking? Trying to put on muscle.
So you need to have fat in your diet, but you don't have to go overboard. I think when you're bulking, it's more important to get the carbs and the protein in there that you need. And then, yes, you need to have extra calories, so fat is a great way to get extra calories.
Yeah, because it's just so dense.
It's so dense. You get 9 calories per gram for fat, where everything else is 4 calories per gram.
Yeah, I meant to mention that earlier. So fat is so energy dense that it's, for a gram of fat, it's over double the calories as opposed to a gram of protein or a gram of carbohydrates. So when you're trying to gain muscle, I've always done better on higher fat diets just because I just physically can't fit that much in my stomach. And so when I was up at my highest calories, which were like 4,250 2 years ago, my fat gram, I was eating like 150 grams of fat a day because I just couldn't eat that much food. I can get it in somewhere else. Another thing that's important about fat is it plays a huge role in hormone production.
Yes.
And hormone production is essential if you're trying to gain muscle, because you have to have the presence of growth hormones to produce muscle tissue. So making sure you have enough fat. If you're trying to bulk and you don't eat enough fat, but like you said before, you can definitely get too much.
Yes.
Do you tend to do better? You said you did better not eating super high fat when you bulk, right?
Yeah, I did a moderate fat and a moderate carbohydrate. If I go one way or the other with either one of those, my body doesn't respond very well. So if I tried a higher fat, lower carb diet when I was bulking, and I definitely bulked, but it wasn't necessarily all good weight that was added to that. Because of my body, just because of my hormone levels the way they are, it naturally stores fat very, very easily.
Gotcha.
So yeah. I need to eat fat, and I make sure I get an adequate amount of it, but I need to make sure I don't go over and above.
Yes. Yeah, that. I think that's really important for people. But what's tough is knowing, what is too much?
Right.
What is enough? And like you just said, you had to try it out.
Yes.
And let's say you do gain a couple of pounds.
Right.
And you realize, hey, you know what? Maybe this percentage of fat in my diet is too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
What's two? I mean, 2-3 pounds, like, just change your calories back.
Yes, exactly.
And get back to where you were, and then maybe try going higher carb. You have to experiment for yourself.
Yeah.
All right, take a quick break here. All right, so before we go on, we're supposed to give a shout out to Kendrick, because he's printing everything out on this printer and texting us, and he wants a shout out. So, hi, Kendrick. Your copies are over here if you would like to come and quietly get them. By the time you're listening to this, he probably won't have the copies. he'll have more copies by then. All right, so we're talking about fat while building muscle, fat while dieting, factors affecting fat requirements. So now let's get into the recommendations of what that looks like in grams, or percentages. So you had always previously done percentage, right?
Yes.
So what is the RDA?
It's a 20-35% of your calories.
Okay, so RDA is recommended daily allowance. This comes from the American Dietetics Association. Mm-hmm. So 20-30% of your total
35%.
20-35% of your total calories coming from fat. And then what is the other acronym?
Well, that's the AMDR.
AMDR.
There is no RDA for fat of anyway.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So there's the AMDR, which is that macronutrient distribution range.
Gotcha.
So that's the 20-35%. I was never taught a gram amount for much fat you should have in a day.
Gotcha. Yeah. I don't understand
it,
that.
It drives me nuts.
Because 20-35%, just the same example that we used in protein before, 20-35% of my 3,300 calorie diet I'm on right now, compared to when I'm not trying to gain weight, or if I'm trying to lose weight and I'm down like 2,600, I mean, the percentages, it doesn't make sense unless, to me, it's in grams.
Right.
It makes more sense in protein in grams and fat in grams. Percentages are just so arbitrary. They're just kind of out there.
Yeah.
It makes more sense to me, especially with what I'm doing athletically at the time. It would change, and I would want to kind of have that more in grams than in just percentages. But 20-35% of your diet in grams of fat.
Right.
Actually, we'd have to break it out into calories. We've talked before about breaking things into calories and breaking it out. The way we do is we solve for protein in grams, and then we solve for fat in grams,
right?
And then we take those two numbers, we multiply the protein times 4 and the fat times 9. We get the calories, we add those two numbers together, and then we have a number, and then we take your total calories of what you should eat in a day, subtract that number we found, and the remainder is where we get your carbs from, which we'll get into in the carb episode. So that helps us figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
So recently you've done it by grams of fat, the same way I do it, and that's the same way that we program for a straight shot, and that's where we say 1 to 2 grams of fat per kilogram, or it ends up being about a half a gram to a gram per pound of body weight.
Right.
For people who are carry more body fat, we'll do that equation based off of their lean body mass rather than their total body mass. Lean body mass is all of your weight that's not body fat. So when we find these grams, what are yours at right now for your diet?
I've been stuck with the same diet for so long I can't even remember.
You just eat the same thing
every day, so it's the same. I know it's around It's a little bit lower, so it's around 25% of my calories.
Your total calories, okay.
Are from fat.
Okay.
But the number escapes you. Okay. Right now.
for mine, they're in the my fat typically falls somewhere between 85 and 90, which for me on bulking, this is the lowest fat that I've ever bulked at. I'm going much higher carb this time. It seems to be working pretty well because it's always easy for me to add fat with this. Mm-hmm. So we figure out grams for people, and this is depending on your personal biology, your lifestyle, the type of diet that you like to eat,
right.
What you're doing for exercise. All of those things go into factor with it. But it is, you and I both know how our bodies respond to fat, but that's right. only because we've tested this over mm-hmm. the course of years. I can't just, whenever I'm figuring out somebody's calories, I give them normally, a lot of times I'll give them two different ranges. I'll say, try fat at this range and try it at this range, and then look at how many carbs you have to take in after that.
Right.
So for me, carbs and fat can be moved around mm-hmm. a little bit,
right.
more than protein. Because when yes. you're trying to gain muscle or you're trying to maintain muscle mass, we pretty much know about how much protein you
right.
need. Fat and carbs is so varied in people because different people have totally different respiratory quotient rates,
mm-hmm.
where some people are still fat-burning machines when their heart rate's up. Some people burn tons and tons of carbs even when they're not doing much activity at all.
Right.
So that's why I'm kind of dancing around the answer to the question, but the answer is we don't know exactly how many grams you need, but we can give you an idea to try.
Right.
Some people find, I just can't get in that much fat. Other people are like, I have one, Melissa, who is following a diet that I made for her, and she is not used to eating that many carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first gave her carbs, she was like, I can't eat this. So I gave her more fat, and she said, well, there's still too many carbs, but I'll try this. And so now that she's been doing it for a while, she says, well, it's going pretty well, but I still having trouble getting in all these carbs. So I just sort of told her, well, you can then go ahead and take your fat up and drop your carbs out.
Yeah.
So just play around with it.
Exactly.
But it's not going to, you know, don't play around with it over the course of 7 days. Right. Play around with it over the course of 8 weeks.
Yes. Yeah.
People have plenty of time to figure out their diets. They mm-hmm. just need to take the time to do it.
Right.
So yeah, this is one that you really have to play around with for yourself, how you do better mm-hmm. with when it comes to fat intake. Do want to quickly add two last things. First, timing around workouts for fat.
A lot of that goes with your digestion and how well you can function off of a meal, either high or fat. It's usually recommended to have a low-fat meal prior to working out
yep.
and then having a higher-fat meal afterwards just because of the digestion process.
But not right after.
Not right after,
yes.
no.
Yes, so we said before about the absorption rate. You don't want to eat something super high fat immediately after your workout because it's going to slow down the rate that your body can absorb protein and carbohydrates.
Right.
So we said before, it's not super important to get protein right after your workout,
yeah.
But down the line,
you
want it. So typically my first meal after my workout is all, well, the very, very first one is all carbs. The next one after that is carbs and protein, and
mm-hmm.
then I get my fat back in. I eat a lot of fat at dinner and then mm-hmm. before bed.
Right.
So it's still have your fat throughout the day, but my meal before my workout doesn't have any fat in it.
No, mine doesn't.
Yours only, yeah, yours no. is chicken and rice.
Chicken and rice,
yep. Mine's chicken and rice. So chicken and rice
chicken
crew.
Chicken and rice.
Yeah, so we don't, that way we don't have anything that's gonna be sitting heavy in our stomach
right.
when we eat, and you know, 2 hours later we work out. Carbs and protein are pretty much out of our stomach by that point,
yeah.
or on their way out.
Right.
Whereas if we had that creamy fat layer floating around the top of our stomach. Our chyme, I haven't used that word in a while, it's going to really slow you down. You're going to
yeah.
end up burping a lot when you work out. Do not try to eat a high fat meal before you go run.
No.
It's going to be sloshing around. It'll slosh out of you. Yeah, so time around your workouts, keep the fat kind of away from your workouts.
Mm-hmm.
Get it in the morning, get it at night. If you work out in the afternoon, depending on when you work out, just try to get the
right.
fat other times away from that.
Yeah.
Last thing here, though, keto diets.
Oh,
God. Okay, so keto is considered a high-fat diet. Most people think it's high protein. It's moderate protein, very, very, very low, almost no carbs,
mm-hmm.
and high fat. So why after, because this diet used to be called the keto diet, it used to be called the Atkins diet,
mm-hmm.
and also the South Beach diet was also low carb. It's
right.
been called all these other things, but now it's cool because CrossFitters are doing it. It's called keto. So what are your personal problems with the keto diet?
It so severely limits your carbohydrates that, like we talked about with the protein in the different episodes, that your body wants to burn carbohydrate first.
Yes.
So when you completely take away that carbohydrate, your body is functioning at a disadvantage because it's not using the most optimal energy source for that. Then when it's so high in fat, you know, your body, it's not designed to work like that.
Yeah. My thing with it is, I mean, you have people who are, they have to eat so much fat, they're doing shots of coconut oil and, you know, making these, you know, little fat treats, which are basically like balls of peanut butter and coconut oil and stuff like that. But the only vegetables they're able to eat are basically leafy greens because they're so low in carb. You're missing out on, like, fruit. No one ever got fat from just eating fruit.
Not fresh fruit.
Yes, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but and even people, I mean, I know some people who've done fruit excessively and had some blood sugar issues. But for the most part, people who are suffering from type 2 diabetes aren't eating tons of fresh fruit and vegetables. They're pretty self-limiting because they have so much water and fiber. Mm-hmm. You can only eat so much of them.
Right.
So eating, you know, a diet where you can't eat anything other than leafy greens, you're not able to eat awesome things like sweet potatoes or butternut squash, which are super high in vitamin A, and or carrots, or fruits that are high in potassium like oranges and bananas. So you're missing out on all of these micronutrients by having a severely limited diet. It does limit how much processed food you can take in, in theory, but then when you hear about people who are keto and they're trying to get as much fat as possible, and you can do cheese, you can do processed meat, you can do lunch meat, like
and then all those fat soluble vitamins are toxic. They have a toxicity.
Yes.
Level. So the water soluble ones, your body will just get rid of any excess that you have, but it'll store excess of all of those vitamins. So while there aren't a lot of cases of people, you know, having issues because of toxicity levels of vitamins, that is an option or a possibility.
Possibility of it, yeah, definitely.
And so whenever I cringe, whenever you completely restrict a certain food group or a certain macronutrient or something, moderation is always, I say, the best bet. And when you have something that just completely shuts you down in one area, your body's not designed to work
that
way.
The fact that people experience like flu-like symptoms when their body's trying to switch from, hey, I want to run on some carbs here, to, no, I'm only giving you fat, and now we're burning these things called ketones as fuel sources, and your body's in a state of ketoacidosis, which is potentially harmful for your kidneys if you're not being careful with it and staying well hydrated. I have seen some evidence that is helpful in cases of certain cancers because cancer is feeding off of sugar cells. But again, this is a diet that somebody's trying because you know, there's something else interfering in their body that's killing them.
Right.
And I just don't see keto as being the first diet I would have my clients jump to if they were trying to lose some weight.
Right.
You're better off just moderately decreasing your calories and eating a balanced diet.
Right. So for the American population, I can understand why decreasing carbohydrates would be beneficial.
Yes.
Because if you look at the typical American diet, it's way too high in carbohydrates.
Yeah.
But just taking it to the extent that keto does is not, I don't think, is very good.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Straight from Rebecca. All right. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. I really appreciate it. If you have a second, you could leave us a rating on whatever platform you're currently listening to us on. That would be awesome. Now, we have something new here in the works at Straight Shot that I wanted to tell you all about as we get ready to officially launch it, but Rebecca will now be doing custom meal plans for us. So she'll review your current diet, establish your calories and your macronutrients based off of your goals, and then design a meal plan just for you with substitutions and exchanges that you can use within that template. Now, if you have a body weight goal of any kind, diet is at least 80% of reaching that goal, so a meal plan could be extremely helpful for you. Again, we'll have all of the details up on our website soon, but if you would like to get in on it early, find us on social media using the handle @straightshottraining and shoot us a message. And a good diet needs a solid training program to go with it, so head over to straightshottraining.com for details on our functional fitness training program. Thanks again, and have a great week, everybody.